This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
This is the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and it's a brand new episode, and I get to share a brand new story today. We head to Melbourne, Australia, to touch base with Michael Harvey, who's got a pretty cool story, which we're going to share today. But thank you so much for downloading and listening to this podcast. Some great reviews coming through on iTunes. Don't forget that we are giving away an entry into an Ironman race at the end of the year for one lucky person who's left us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't done it yet, if you wouldn't consider doing it, it really helps us get in front of more people and spread the word of the Kona Edge. It's growing pretty nicely, and we're going to continue that. So review coming in from P. Feet in South Africa, saying, as a newbie to Ironman, I was delighted to be able to learn about every discipline as well as nutrition. This has saved me so much time and effort, as I've not only needed to make all the mistakes myself, I've also picked up some really good training tips, and I'm still a fan 1 year later. That's awesome. Thanks, P-Feet. Much appreciated. Don't forget to head over to thekonaedge.com/win. That's where you can find out more details and get your entry in to win that entry into an Ironman. But without further ado, let's get into today's podcast. We head over to Melbourne, Australia. Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. We head to Melbourne, Australia now to catch up with our next guest, Michael Harvey. Michael, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Brad.
These time zone things are quite interesting. Obviously, I'm in Cape Town, you're in Melbourne. We've been talking about the Olympics before we started recording, which is taking place in Rio. It makes life interesting, doesn't it?
It's like being on an aeroplane for the last couple of weeks, trying to keep up with everything that's happening around the world. So we'll lay in limbo.
Exactly. Michael, let's touch on your sort of journey into this water triathlon. You were pretty active as a kid growing up. I think, like most Australians, it's a very outdoorsy sort of country. The weather's conducive to be playing and mucking around outdoors. Tell me all about your childhood.
Yeah, so growing up, I started off in little athletics. I learned to swim as a child, as you do here in Australia. It's sort of the prerequisite. Send the kids down when they're, you know, 3 or 4 to get water confident. But I wasn't too much of a fan back then, and got into little athletics, which I did for a number of years. And then back where I was from was a rural town in New South Wales, and used to be blistering hot out on the athletics field, and it was very exposed and hot. And my granddad suggested to my mum that it'd be cool if I went and learned or did swimming instead of athletics. So there and started a 10-year competitive career in swimming.
It's funny how little things like that sort of push you into directions that you go. I mean, athletics and swimming, I mean, swimming's pretty big in Australia. You've shown at the Olympics you've got some good swimmers, but it's not one of the biggest sporting codes. Obviously, there's a few others. I think cricket, rugby union, footy, Aussie rules football. You didn't play any of those growing up?
No, definitely the team sports, and it was obviously as you get older and into your teens, and you know, you're thinking more about, you know, friendships rather than just going along with what mum and dad are sort of taking you down to. And but yeah, the school sports and whatnot are quite popular. But I think from an individual point in Australia, I think swimming is actually the most participated in sport. And I think that's definitely why we, you know, you see the strength on a world basis as well. It's just so competitive over here. So it was a good place to be competitive, because it helped you go to a quite a high level.
And the shift into triathlon, I mean, did you stay active out of school? I mean, once you had finished up and I mean, often life gets in the way with people, and they might be active growing up and as teens, but when they discover uni and beer and women, they end up sort of letting that go by the wayside. Did you stay pretty active all the way through?
Yeah, in my later teens, particularly the end of high school, the introduction of parties and girls and all the whatnot sort of led me away from sport for a little while. And for that part, that was when I actually got into playing a bit of rugby league and rugby union with my mates. It was sort of finishing off high school and doing that side of things, but I eventually meandered back to looking to go towards, you know, swimming, and that's where I stumbled across triathlon to try and get fit again.
You found your way, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly right. Back to where it all began.
Back to the straight and narrow. Tell me about stumbling into the sport of triathlon. I mean, it's one thing training for a sport on its own that you need to be competitive, and now all of a sudden you need to train in three. Where did your triathlon journey start?
Yeah, so it's funny the ebbs and flows in looking back. So I can remember vividly, I was in a rental place that I was living in northern New South Wales, and hadn't done anything, literally hadn't got into a pool for probably about 2 years other than to, you know, splash around with some mates. And, you know, had been playing, you know, football, and I was sitting at home eating lunch, and the highlights reel came to the Port Macquarie Ironman on the television. And, there's something about, you know, the challenges, and I had that competitive streak in me from swimming, you know, to a higher level. And I thought that was something that challenged me enough to get me off the couch and get going. And so the next morning I trundled down to the swimming pool and spoke to the guy who owned the pool and said that I wanted to do an Ironman. And funnily enough, he'd done about five or six himself. So he was sort of became the unofficial mentor.
Talk about going big or going home. Straight up Ironman. No baby steps.
Well, that's right. I looked at, you know, and particularly you see how they package it, as well. And it was a very, and that was 10 years ago? So 2006. So it wasn't as mainstream. Maybe it's mainstream because I'm in the industry a little bit more myself now, but, I hadn't seen anything like it, and it was just really captivating and seeing, you know, naturally everyone's, you know, seen through the 90s, the Hawaiian Ironman. So there was all this sort of mystique around it, and I thought, well, this would be a really good challenge just to go and lay it down.
And it was probably only an hours long highlights package. How hard can it be?
Exactly right. It's a little bit deceptive.
Let's talk about the journey to getting there. I mean, it's one thing making the decision, but there's a lot of hard work from making that decision to actually arriving and on the start line and actually finishing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was very lucky in that because I'd swum for so long, and even though I'd spent a bit of time out of the pool in 2 years, but I'd done by that stage, I had 10 years of swimming under my belt, and so that was where I started. I went back to the pool and I thought, well, you know, I can lose all the party weight by doing what I know and getting back and getting fit. And then, you know, I'd kept running bits and pieces throughout high school, doing, you know, cross country and whatnot, nothing serious. But the swimming, I find aerobically, and people will tell you differently, but I think aerobically it's what can keep you, you know, at a pretty high level across all different sports. So yeah, I started in the pool, had never really ridden a bike, and so that was where I was really out of my depth. I had to literally learn from scratch, and that was the long process of doing that, and I managed to, within what was it, about three, so that was in May. In September I did my first sprint distance triathlon, and I'd signed up for Port Macquarie Half Ironman, which was either the end of October or beginning of November, so not quite 6 months after I'd seen that highlight package. And back in those days, that was, you had to do the half to qualify for the full. So that was my, you know, I didn't really get to choose to do the full. I had to, you know, do the qualifying part. And so I went there and did my first half, and I thought, that's incredibly, I can't even understand how you could, you know, do that twice. And I was fortunate enough, I didn't actually get an automatic spot. I got a roll down to compete in the Port Macquarie Ironman the following year in 2007.
I love that you said after that first half, you thought to yourself, how am I supposed to go and do that again? And that's something a lot of us go through when we do our first half, especially when, as you say, you watched it on TV and thought, oh, how hard can that be? Because I was exactly the same. I was like, it can't be that bad. And my experience of my first half was exactly as you described it, that you get to the end of that, you're shattered, and you think to yourself, there is no ways that I could do this again. from a mental perspective, and you know that now, and I do too, I mean, it is a very mental thing, and once you've pushed through that, it's actually not such a big step up. I know we're playing it down, but it is a lot of hard work. But for you, what did you go and then do differently in the build-up to that half that you did in the build-up to the full?
I definitely knew that I needed to do bigger things. So, and like you mentioned, to really sort of challenge, definitely physically, because there was that part you needed to develop, but for that mental side. So, you know, I'd have one of my mates, and he was funny. He's a 120 kilo rugby player, and he used to go out. We used to live together, and he'd jump on the push bike and, you know, feed me food and water as I'm running along in the searing heat up in northern New South Wales. And so, you know, you'd go and do a 30K run, and I had no idea back then. And, you know, I remember one night after doing a run like that, and I think I just had Gatorade the whole way. I didn't know about, you know, that you need to have other electrolytes and proper food and all sorts of stuff. And I got home after this 30K run, and I just threw up for like an hour. And, you know, I was very green at the time, and I look back at it, you know, in two parts. So, you know, it was such a big learning experience, but, it was kind of good to cut your teeth the hard way rather than, you know, I couldn't even afford internet back then in my late teens, early 20s. So I had to really just self experiment and learn that way.
Do you think sometimes that's the best, is that a lot of people getting into the sport now have almost got too much information, and they need to almost figure it out for themselves. Sometimes you need to make those mistakes to learn.
I definitely do, Brad. I think I coach triathlon now as well, and I think I obviously try and lead my athletes in the best path, but I also realize that people learn at their own rate. So you can show someone a certain way, but until they actually can grasp it themselves and they can go, oh, like they have that bit of aha moment, I think that's when you can sort of really run with it, and you learn, make mistakes, and it sort of just repeats. And I think that's really why Ironman, in my opinion, is so popular, is because it is just such a hard beast to get right, that even in an elite level, you know, professional, they still have that where they're just learning so much. So it keeps people, I guess, going that way as well mentally.
It's also one of those races that, because it's so long, it's almost impossible to have the perfect race. There's always one part of it that keeps you coming back because you think you can do better in that part. And you might get that right in the next race, but then you go and mess something else up.
So many variables. It's, you know, like you said, you could have the perfect 220 kilometers, but then the last 26 just goes downhill, or it could be the first 26. So yeah, it's the phoenix. It's hard to catch.
I think that's what keeps us coming back for more. Michael, as a kid, I mean, you mentioned the swimming and a bit of athletics. Were you pretty good? I mean, were you competitive? Did you win stuff as a kid?
Yes. So swimming wise, I was a big competitor for me. Swimming, particularly in my early and mid teens, it meant the world to me, and I committed a lot of time, and I really enjoyed it. I loved the racing. I loved that I can, you know, look back and go, people trying to beat me, but having that ability to almost outwill yourself to do better. So I swam to a national level here in Australia, and so I think my best result I got was 13th in my age group at the time. So it wasn't, you know, anything groundbreaking, but it was in an arena where I felt like I was, you know, having a good crack and getting around some good swimmers. And now it puts a smile on the face where I'll be like one of those granddads one day sitting back in the armchair going, oh, you know, I swam against this person who went to the Olympics, like Matt Abood. I swam against him as a child, and he's just gone to, I think he's either second or third Olympics now. So, in good company anyway.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And then making that step to triathlon, I mean, did that ability from a youngster carry into triathlon, or did you really have to find your way and develop that sort of ability that you have? And has that taken some time to sort of develop?
Yeah, I think the swimming definitely set me up in terms of not some part of a competitive drive, but being relentless, let's say, you know, being saying, all right, this is what I want to do. And, you know, from when I did it when I was swimming, I know that you know, Rome wasn't built in a day and I was going to have to put time and training down, and but I enjoyed that process. It wasn't a burden to me. I like the feeling of, you know, being absolutely spent at the end of the session, or if you've done something really well, or, you know, pushing hard in a race or something like that. So there's a lot of things, and I still find that, you know, you can pick and pull other things from your life into current experiences to help you get the best out of them now as well.
As far as your first experience of the full at Port Macquarie, I mean, it's, you come out of the half and you think in yourself, there's no ways I can do this. You go back and do the work. Tell me about how things went in your first full.
Yeah, so I the only bit of real insight that I had was that I knew what I would swim roughly. the rest of it was going to be a bit of a, just try and make it to the end of the bike leg, and then if I'm off the bike in the cutoff, well, I can probably walk the marathon. So on the day, I knew that I was going to swim relatively well, and back then it was a mass start with the pros, so they put the pros about, I think, 20 metres ahead of the rest of us, and I managed to tack on to, there's a two-lap course, and yeah, after the first lap, we caught the, I think it was the second pack of pros, in the swim. And so I ended up swimming, I think it was about 50 minutes or 51 minutes for my swim leg. And mentally, I'd spoken to, like I said, my mentor who was working at the pool at the time. We knew that I was going to be out of the water at the pointy end, but we knew that I wasn't going to be off the bike at the pointy end. So it was a pretty, I didn't think about it at the time, but there was a lot of people. So I got out of the water, I think, in maybe 50th place overall. And I think I got off the bike in like 1,050th place. So there was a lot of people that went past.
Did you find that difficult? I mean, not just from an ego perspective, but you get out of the water and you're up there. It's easy to get carried away and think, gee, this is going fantastically well, and an Ironman's a long day. Did you have to force yourself to hold back?
Not really. Because of my, I think if the ride had have been at the start, maybe, but being that I had my best leg first, I knew, and I didn't take it as a negative thing, I knew that there was going to be a drop back, and in my head I was like, well, you know, at least running's like my second best thing, so maybe I can go. And I think that's where early on the run I suffered late in the run because of what I did early in the run, as a lot of people do. It was a long day, on the run, and I can remember bits and pieces, and there's other parts that I don't remember.
Tell me about what the biggest sort of lessons you learnt out of that first one.
Definitely nutrition. I didn't have any nutrition plan going in. I remember riding on the bike and getting to the first sort of aid station outside of town, and they had Anzac biscuits, and I thought, oh, that's a good idea. I'll roll with that. And so Anzac biscuits and bananas were the go on the bike, and which, you know, it tasted nice, but I don't think gave a hell of a lot of value nutritionally. And definitely biding your time to know that, you know, if you can just keep on chipping away, even if it's a tough day, that you can sort of keep on going. So that would be the two things I took out of it. There were plenty of times where I remember one time it was about halfway into the run leg, and I started cramping, and I had to sit down in the gutter, and the volunteer came over and they're like, you're all right. And then I went to get up, and then the hamstrings cramped. And so I just sort of had to sit there for about 5 minutes to let everything settle down. And it's very humbling thinking back now, sort of, you know, what I have done, but I can sort of relate to where people are now as well, particularly if I'm coaching them. Like, you know, a lot of them sort of see me for what I am now, but I've seen that, and I actually value, you know, having gone through that experience as well, rather than being all, you know, bells and whistles and all great from the first race.
Time-wise, what did you do that first one in?
Just over 13 hours, so 13 hours and 6 minutes, if my memory serves me correctly.
See, mate, you're giving me hope here.
Well, that's right, and I think that's what it is. You gotta look at it for what it is. And I was literally less than 12 months into the sport, so I knew how much time I'd put into my swimming and you know, how the gains became so small. So I guess the exciting part is if you're that new into the sport, then you've got a lot more gain.
Absolutely. And I love you spoke about biding your time, because I think a lot about Ironman triathlon is patience. And a lot of people want things to come too quickly, but success in the sport is a lot of it is based on patience.
Oh, 100%. You know, I was only speaking to an athlete yesterday. You know, massive hats off to Michael Phelps, and, you know, with the amount of gold that he's won. But I think one thing that people really don't look at is just how much time he has actually put in to get those gold medals. You know, he's won 22, but like, he did his first Olympics when he was 15 in 2000. Like, he spent probably since he was 7 or 8 years old just following a black line up and down a pool. And that's been rewarded, and that's what you see where, you know, people put the time in to go and do that work. Then, particularly in Ironman, the same, you know, year after year after year. And if you can just keep on showing up, then, you know, you can make those steps. They're small steps, but, eventually it adds up.
Michael, where did the seed for Kona sort of get planted for you? You mentioned seeing and reading about the sort of Ironman Hawaii when you first got introduced to the sport, but when did Kona really become a driving force and a goal for you?
Yeah, so immediately after my first Ironman, I see this often as well with people getting in too quickly, I was really burnt out. Like, it took a lot out of me, not just physically, but it was just mentally very draining. So I ended up spending about 12 or 18 months just sort of dabbling, not really doing much, sort of keeping fit still. But then I needed a carrot, and I've always been that way, just being competitive. I've just needed something to actually get me out of bed. You know, I can't just sort of go through the motions. I couldn't tell you honestly that the decisive moment that I sort of figured it out, but I was like, well, I've done one of these things. I survived it. Now let's have a crack at, like, sort of being good at it. And so that's where I guess I was like, well, how do you define good? You know, what's the litmus test as to saying, you know, you've done well? And for me at that point, it was, to make it to the big dance with the best in the world. And, that was back in 2010. After a while, that I decided, you know, I'm really going to commit to having a crack at it and sort of go from there.
And what did you do? I mean, it's a decision. Once you decide to do it, you then, every decision you take, everything that you do in the build up to that is in that direction. What did you do? Did you, from a training perspective, from a coaching perspective, did you put things in place? What did you put in place that sort of worked towards that goal?
Yeah, so I was lucky. I used a bit like when I swam and I got into the triathlon first. I knew, all right, well, I've done this. I've done an Ironman. I've done a half. So I went and did another. I trained up and I was like, all right, I'm going to do my second half. And so I did my second half and took off about half an hour off my initial time in the half. And I was like, all right, I know I can get myself to a certain level, and then I'm going to need to invest in help from somewhere else to, you know, to get me past that. So I just worked away as much as I could, till I thought, all right, well, I've sort of hit a bit of a roof, hit a bit of the ceiling. And then I'm going to go and, you know, get some help from there. And so, you know, I cut my teeth again a lot. I got a lot of injuries, you know, doing too much, doing too fast. All those different types of things. But again, I think hindsight's a wonderful thing. Yeah. You sort of look back and you go, well, made a lot of mistakes, but because of that, it sort of helped me learn a lot throughout that period of time as well. But in terms of other things I was doing, like in between then and qualifying for Kona, for me, it was anything that I could do that was within the rules of the game, I was prepared to do. So like my injuries, I would, if I needed 3, 6, you know, 10 treatments a week, I'd go and get it. And again, I spent so much time in physios and chiros, and, you know, I joke with my athletes now that I sort of have an honorary doctorate in sports physiology, because I've just spent so many hours with these people learning about how my body works and what I've done and how I make it work better and whatnot. And, to, you know, the bed, you know, my chiro, he's like, you should get this bed, it'll help your back better. And so I'd go and spend, you know, $2,000 on getting a new bed because it was going to help me sleep better, which was going to help me recover better. So for me, it was like, tell me what I need to do. I'm not going to leave any stone unturned. So that was to the level that I really wanted to get there. And, it can be consuming, but at the same time, I think, if it means enough to you, then you're willing to do the hard yards to get there.
And you did. Tell me about the qualification and once you've got to that point where it's in the bag and you go, I'm going to Kona. That must be a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, it was a unique, situation because the race I qualified in Japan, in 2013, I'd picked that race, because of the course itself. So I'm a slighter build. So I only weigh, at that stage, I was less than 70 kilos. So quite small. And the hillier course, I found that I was better on the hills on the bike. And my swim and run was good, so we picked there, and I didn't realise, but I led out of the swim, and I led the whole 180Ks on the bike, but because of the way the course was configured, you couldn't actually get any, I guess, time checks on anyone or anything like that. It was just sort of, you know, go along, and it wasn't until about 10Ks into the run that I could sort of do a bit of a time check, and I was looking at the bib numbers, and we actually had a different coloured bib for age group, so I could work out who was who. And I got the first time check and it was 16 minutes. I'm going, surely that can't be right. You know, 16 minutes is a long time. You don't sort of usually get that. And so I ran to the next turnaround point. There was two turnaround points. It was like a point to point. You had to do it twice. And it was 16 minutes again. And I go, no, I've missed the bloke. There's someone else that's there, I've just not paid attention, or they've snuck through or something like that. And so I ran again, so this time I sort of made it to about 25Ks into the run, and finally this time it was 16 minutes again, so I'm like, I think this is it. I think, you know, I think I'm in first, there's no one else up the road. I really started to then go into a bit of, into pushing too hard. It was about don't lose the spot, and so I remember listening to something the year before. Pete Jacobs had won the Ironman over in Hawaii, and he talked about how he actually strategically walked through aid stations to stretch his hip flexors to stop him from cramping. And so I started, you know, just precautionarily stretching my quads and stretching hamstrings just at different aid stations just to hold that in the bag. And yeah, I held it 16 minutes and feels like a lifetime ago, but I can still remember it so vividly. It was fantastic just to sit there and, you know, something that you've been working so hard for, and the finishes line photo that I have, I've got a bit of a name for myself now for the good races I have. I tend to turn on a decent pose, but it's just raw emotion. You put so much in, and to finally have achieved it, it's just so empowering.
And then heading to Kona, I mean, did you change much, or did you stick to the same formula? Was it the same thing? How do you approach a race like Kona? Obviously, going to Japan, the goal was to qualify, but when you're going to Kona, you're racing against the best in the world. Do you go there just to experience it and you know what, we'll take out what we can get, or do you go there to race the thing and see how good you are against the best in the world?
Yeah, in my head at that stage, then I'd sort of decided that I was in two minds because I wanted to go to Kona eventually and do well. Sort of like how I'd done my time to get to Kona, I realised that you don't go there and just generally, some people do, but most people don't do well straight away. So I sort of gave myself a three race thing. And so I went there the first one, yeah, just to learn. And I spent a month there before the race just to learn the course and to get used to the conditions. But it wasn't more, it was that acclimatizing part, but for me, it was more about just learning the course and you know, being able to be comfortable out there. And I'm one of those people, I tend to get quite anxious if I'm not aware of what's coming up. I like to have all my ducks in a row, which you can't really do to a certain extent in Ironman because it's such a a volatile event, but at least if you know the course, you know how to pace yourself at different points and to expect certain hills and that type of thing. So I went there as a learning curve, a learning experience, and that was what it was for. So obviously train to have a great day, but not with the expectation of, you know, going away with a title or anything like that.
How badly do you want to keep going back?
I went back again last year. I look back at the first Ironman, and I look back at my two Konas, and both of them haven't been great days. They've been big lessons. The first one, I learned a lot about bike handling and my bike setup at that time. Again, being lighter, it was windy the first year I was there. So I went back and I was like, all right, I'll change the bike setup, put more weight on the front wheel so I had more stability. And then went back last year and it was just brutally hot and I really suffered and, still working through the causes behind that. But I think I actually might have had, hyponatremia. So my body just started really swelling and retaining water. And so I bombed out. I sat under a marquee on the Queen K at about 17 Ks into the marathon and was sort of lying there next to a guy who was sort of drifting in and out of consciousness. And I was like, is this out of a movie or what is this? And eventually, I decided to get up and, support. I was over there with a number of people that I knew at the time. And I thought, well, I've done all the work to get here, as bad as I'm feeling right now and, you know, a bit despondent. I'd like to at least finish and also to, you know, to give a bit of support. So whenever I saw, you know, the guys and girls I knew over there, I'd, you know, give them a bit of a cheer or a pat on the back and, you know, tell them to keep on going. And, sort of just try to switch the energy rather than being really negative about it, to sort of be there and enjoy that experience. So in terms of getting back, I definitely want to get back. I think I've got a few other things, particularly I started my own business this year. So putting a lot of energy into that, as I have done to qualify, and I know if I put the energy in the right spaces, things go well.
It must be quite difficult having unfinished business on the Big Island, because it's not like you something like that happens in an Ironman just around the corner and you can go back next year and do it. You just pay the entry fee and you're there. It's tough. It must be a bitter pill to swallow.
Oh, 100%, you know, and that's the thing. It's that you do a lot of soul searching. You know, you can see it in some of the eyes of some of the Olympians. You know, they do it worse. So it's every 4 years there, and no doubt a lot harder to qualify for the Olympics. But yeah, both times I've sat back. You know, even if you have a good day, I think you walk away and go, all right, you know, that sort of went well, and maybe step up next time. But when you really get sort of hammered down, you sort of take a look back, and particularly when you qualify and you get there and you've had good races to get there. It makes you look at that, but at the same time, you know, I look at, like I said earlier on, it's that part of you make mistakes and you grow. And I think for that part, sometimes it can be the better learning experience to really do it bad. So you really set back. Whereas if you have that okay race, you might go in a little bit complacent. And it's something I say to a lot of people when I'm talking to them about, you know, doing their first Ironman. I'll see a lot of people do. If they've done the training, if they've been patient and they've not gone in too early, I see a lot of people have really good first 10, but then they go to number two and they get a little bit cocky. You know, they think they can do it better and they can push it a little harder, or they can, you know, do whatever it is. And their second one sometimes isn't as good as their first, just because they've, you know, not respected it as much. Whereas if you've been humbled, then you sort of look for answers and look for clues, as opposed to, you know, swanning back in to try and knock everyone out.
Yeah, you're so right. And there's so many great life lessons that you can learn from an Ironman. And I think that's why I personally love the sport so much. If you could go back now, Michael, and talk to the you before you did your first Ironman, what would you tell him? What are some of the lessons that you've learned along the way that you would help sort of tell yourself to fast track your journey?
A big one, and this is one I stole off many years ago off Brett Sutton, hurry slowly. That would be the biggest one. Is, you know, a lot of people, there's that patience part of, you know, the now, we want to have things now, we want to achieve it now. If we don't do it now, then we can get really hard on ourselves. And sometimes if you just take that little bit of a back step and take the pressure off yourself, you know, and just accept, all right, if this is what I can do training wise now, and you're being honest with yourself, it's not about making excuses. It's about going, all right, realistically, where am I at right now? And actually being okay with that rather than expecting something else, and putting pressure on yourself. Cause, you know, you've got to enjoy what you do. And if you enjoy what you do, you'll do well at it and you'll continue to do it and therefore you improve. So yeah, the hurry slowly and consistency, you know, if you're willing to do the yards, you just need to keep showing up to be able to get the results in the end.
Could not agree more. Michael, thank you so much for your time here on the Cone Edge. Much appreciated. I look forward to getting you back on to talk about your swim, your bike and your run, and we'll touch on some nutrition as well, but we'll save that for another time. Thanks for your time today, mate.
Thanks very much, Brad.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.